Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. The 80s and 90s were full of memorable Black characters on the small screen. Take, for example, Carl Winslow and Steve Urkel of Family Matters.
Now, if you want to do the Steve Urkel dance, all you have to do is hitch up your pants, bend your knees, and stick out your pelvis. I'm telling you, baby, it's better than Elvis.
And, of course, we also had Will, Uncle Phil, and Aunt Viv on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Honey, the last time we saw you, you were this funny little boy. Now look at you. Oh, my goodness, you are a man.
That was the plan.
It is amazing. You certainly have grown, Will.
And how could you not love the ladies of Living Single?
What the hell?
For your information, we are having a beauty night.
It ain't working.
And let's not forget identical twin sisters, Tia and Tamara of Sister Sister.
What are you doing?
We're going home.
Hey, you let go of my baby.
Hey, what do you mean your baby? Hey, watch that now.
What?
Get out of here. What?
Mom? That girl has my face.
These were iconic Black characters in front of the camera, but they masked a very different reality behind the scenes. From the writer's room to the executive suite, Black creators were few and far between. Writers' room diversity has improved in recent decades. Shout out to Shonda Rhimes. But there's still plenty of work to be done. For more on this, we're joined now by Hannah Georges, staff writer for The Atlantic. She recently penned a piece on Black-led television shows and the writers behind them. Hannah, great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Kim Bass, creator of Sister Sister, Kenan and Kel, and staff writer on the first two seasons of In Living Color. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hannah, I want to start off by playing a clip that you actually write about at the beginning of your piece. I want to listen to an exchange between Carl Winslow and his son Eddie in a 1994 episode of Family Matters.
I was on my way to a party in Burlington Heights. I was driving along, minding my own business, when the cops pulled me over.
Did they ask you for your license and registration?
Yeah. Then I asked what the problem was, and one of them told me to shut up. Then he made me get out of the car and lie face down. Then he cuffed me.
That's unusual procedure, unless you provoked it.
But I didn't. People were driving by looking at me like I was a criminal, and I didn't even do anything.
All right, Hannah, what did you learn about the writing process behind that scene?
Well, I spoke with Felicia D. Henderson, who was a writer in the room at the time. And Felicia told me about the experience of being in that room, hearing that line proposed and saying essentially that that's not a realistic way for a Black father, even one who's a cop, to speak to his son. And she said that the room of writers felt like she was accusing them of being racist just because she said, hey, maybe this dialogue isn't the way we want to play this out. And that I think she said, you know, you could hear a pin drop because people were sort of so silent and uncomfortable when she said, maybe this isn't the right way to do it.
Kim, let me ask you, before you were creating your own shows, when you were working in writers' rooms where you had less control over the racial diversity of it, is that the kind of experience that that you can relate to, that you experienced?
Absolutely. It was a very interesting experience to be in a room where if the subject happened to be about Black life in America or the characters were Black and had to interact in society, and to have the opinions of a non-Black person who would be in charge of the show sort of override things that didn't seem right for someone like myself and maybe another writer at the time. And we got into huge arguments over such things. But I will say I did feel free to argue because ultimately the decision was not going to be mine. So I thought it was my job, certainly my obligation, to fight what I believed was right and so that there wouldn't be some sort of portrayal that, you know, was counter to what I knew to be true.
And Hannah, I'm going to come to you. I want to talk a little bit about class. In the early 90s in particular, there was an interesting dichotomy where on the one hand, often on the big screen, we saw black characters from working class and poor communities. And on the small screen, there was a lot of focus around middle income and middle class characters. What did you learn about the writers behind those sort of middle class shows?
Right. Well, people got pushback on that, too. I spoke quite a bit with Susan Fales Hill, who was in the room for The Cosby Show and went on to be lead writer and EP on A Different World. And she remembers having an executive tell her that the Cosby family was white because, you know, they lived in that house and their jobs were what they were, right? That this was a family who, because they were upper middle class and occupied a social class that felt more familiar to him through the lens of whiteness, had to be white. So you had those kinds of things happening. But one thing I was curious about as I spoke with people was what sorts of experiences were being left out, because some of the ways of communicating about Black stories have to be done in ways that feel comfortable to white executives, yes, to white showrunners, potentially, yes, but in ways that feel very like they operate from a sense of sort of middle class values, and like you have to speak as though you went to a certain kind of school. And when writers are put into that box as well, I think that the shows that we see look different.
Kim, I want to talk to you about what it was like to be in a writer's room where there weren't a lot of African Americans. Did you ever feel that there were going to be negative career repercussions for speaking up about authenticity and Blackness in the scripts?
Absolutely. There were jobs that I didn't get because I spoke up about what they were asking me to write. That happened in certain occasions. There was one particular show that I was offered to be a co-executive producer on the show, and they sent me the pilot script, and there were so many things in it that were so offensive as far as I was concerned regarding Black people. So I had a meeting with the executive producer, and his justification for writing the things that he wrote, he said, "Well, my roommate in college talked like that." And I said, "Well, I don't know who your roommate was, but, you know, that kind of language, you know, might have been prevalent 25 years ago, but it isn't now, and I find it offensive." And so the position I was offered was withdrawn. And I believe I was brought there to basically put the black stamp on what they were trying to do with that show. And I would.
Oh, more than a few of us have been that great brown and black stamp of approval on things that are problematic. I absolutely get that. And yet, Hannah, I want to push on this a little bit and leave room for the possibility that a racial match between the story, the storyteller, and the show creator may not necessarily be required to tell great stories. So, you know, for me, and this is just personal preference, I'm not a fan of Tyler Perry, recognizing that many people are. But boy, I'm a big fan of those Norman Lear shows from the 1970s. So I don't, you know, and again, this is just my personal preferences. Maybe it's because of my age. But I don't want to leave out the possibility, one, that not all Black folks can tell all Black stories well, and also that there might be white folks who could tell Black stories well.
Right. You know, going into this, I was less foreclosed on the possibility that could happen, right? Like, I spoke with Norman Lear and I referenced those shows, and I do think that they did a really interesting, that they accomplished something very real and very important in bringing a viewership in and having Black viewers as well feel not just represented, but excited by TV at the time that they were airing. So I think that's more than possible. What I'm curious about, and what I'm always curious about, is sort of the power dynamics at hand. And when less what's possible and more who are making these decisions and why, and what are we losing because of it? What do we not see on our screens because fewer people get opportunities, and sort of less the idea that only Black people can tell stories about Black characters.
I like the way that you frame that, sort of what are we missing here? And so, Kim, I guess I'd want to ask you that. You know, we're in a time now where we're seeing not only an increase in Black writers on shows with Black characters, but we're also seeing intersectional Black characters that we've never seen before. I'm thinking about the ways that new spaces outside of the networked networks have allowed, you know, stories like Pose and others to come forward. So I'm wondering, when you talk to younger Black writers today, how are they feeling about the power dynamics for creating and bringing forth Black stories of various kinds?
I think that the younger people who are coming out now are seeing it less as Black stories, but sometimes as Black characters in stories. And I believe that's there's a distinction there, and there should be, because the prevalence of the stereotypical thoughts around writing and characters is sort of old school. And what we're talking about now, rather than say it's a Black story, it might be a story that has Black people in it. It might be a show that has Black characters in it. And of course, we're not a monolith. The Black people are not a monolith. And so you have to be free and you have to be open. So I always say, write what you know, because everyone's experiences are different, and including Black people.
So talk to me, Kim, about writing what you know in the context of bringing forth not only that diversity within racialized communities, but also sort of trying to manage that authenticity and both be authentic to what your own experiences might be, but also to hear maybe even beyond sort of exactly what you yourself have experienced.
Well, I'll give you an example. The first part of my life, when I was up until about age 9 or 10, we're in an all-Black community in what one would call a ghetto. After that, I was in an all predominantly white community. As a matter of fact, our family was the only Black family in the town. And that, again, was a different experience, but I'm still the same Black person. Hmm. And so I have experiences that maybe others didn't have. And, you know, I grew up doing many, many different things. And I try to bring that authenticity to things. And if people talk about, you know, my show, Sister, Sister, well, I grew up with twin sisters. So that gave me an insight. It wasn't about just being Black, but I had twin sisters. And Kenan and Kel was based on my experience with my best friend when we were kids. But it's completely different. And if I might, I have a couple of films coming out next year, early next year. And one is about a white family. I wrote and directed that, and the other is an ensemble cast with all these terrific Black actors, predominantly Latinos as well. And I dare say that people will find it hard to believe that the same writer-director made both those films, but in fact, both of those films were natural fits for me.
I love your point, and I'm so glad you brought us there, that it's not only about a question of sort of the possibilities for non-Black writers writing Black stories or stories that have Black characters, but also, and Hannah, I want to come to you on this, the idea that Black showrunners can be creating stories with racially diverse casts, with predominantly white casts. Let's talk about Shonda Rhimes, Hannah.
Oh, of course. I mean, I love the way that Shonda Rhimes talks about her shows and talks about her just reflecting the world as she sees it and not sort of emphasizing this like capital D diversity that informs the way that we talk about TV sometimes. And that feels so true and it feels so real when you look at her shows, that this is a group of people who are interacting with one another in a workplace. And so, of course, they all look different from one another and their lives are complicated and messy in different ways because that's life.
It is wild that she's able to balance in some ways things that feel very realistic, like, you know, a sister taking her braids out or dealing with her natural hair or whatever, but also in scripts where lots of wildly unlikely things happen. And there is that kind of fun balance between those. Hannah Georges is a staff writer for The Atlantic, and Kim Bass is the creator of Sister, Sister, and Kenan and Kel. And as you heard, he's got a few theatrical releases coming out soon as well. So look for those. They're called Head Shop and Tyson's Run, both out in 2022. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.